Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 91-year-old Al Peguero of Merced, California, Navy veteran of World War II, having served on the light cruiser USS Reno. If you ever end up in City Hall in Reno, Nevada, you'll find the ship's bell, and there's another piece of that cruiser in Washington, D.C. We're going to hear about that shortly, but let's pick up where we left off. It took 7 months' worth of repairs in Charleston, South Carolina, for the Reno to be ready to return to action, and that's what happened in October 1945. More than a month after the Japanese had signed those surrender documents.
The war was over. We happened to hit a Navy Day in Galveston, Texas. We went in a parade, and we opened the ship to the public. And people came aboard ship to see the ship. And we were there a few days, and then they sent us to New York to go to France and England to bring GIs home for Christmas of 1945.
Yeah, you guys were the magic carpet, right?
Yeah, magic carpet. We got across the Atlantic in about 5 days. The one we hit a storm, it took us about 10 days. We go like that, and then go clear down to like that. Just about sunk to, I don't know what the captain was thinking of. Because they hit the North Atlantic in the middle of December. That's rough, real rough.
You mentioned being in Galveston and the parade and people coming on your ship and everything. What did that mean to you that the war was over?
Oh, yeah, that we were going home soon. We was on points. The older you were, the more points you had. Or if you're seeing more action or Purple Heart, anything like that, all that would help you. I forgot a married man was about 20 points. And, you know, some guys just got married coming back. They got married about a month before the war was over. So they lucked out. And we figured, well, our turn to come up. And before I knew it, we was in France and England. And we brought home our GIs home from there. To New York, drop them off, put on a load of new GIs, take them back to France, and get another bunch of old guys, bring them back, see, back and forth.
As far as just the news, you know, VJ Day, Japan has surrendered, this war is over. Had there been days where you weren't sure that was ever going to happen?
No.
Always believed?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, when we first went in, I didn't think that the war was going to last very long. See, can you imagine Japan attacking the United States? No, hard to believe. When we hit the islands, you couldn't count the ships that we had. We would leave, we'd take off maybe 4 carriers, 4 cruisers, and a dozen destroyers. Next day you wake up, there'd be twice as many. The further you see, the more ships of ours you see. So when we hit the Philippines that time, I mean, you couldn't count the ships aboard from one end to the other. There's so many of them.
You saw the strength of our Navy, and that gave you confidence.
Right, yeah. And we were kids, like I said, we always thought that there wouldn't be no match to us. We just never thought that they would even hit us. We got hit that night, we never thought there could be that much. Now, the Jap plane, they hit us. It was an empty torpedo plane.
Well, he had tried to fire his torpedo and hit you, and he missed, right?
Right.
And then he came back around and crashed into the...
Crashed into the ship.
Yeah.
He went into... He tried to hit the bridge, is where all the brains are at. He ended up hitting the fantail, and he hit the turret number 6, and he burned a lot of guys in there. In fact, the guy that got burned the worst was about 3 decks below. And he was sitting under a fan, and he was on damage control. And when that plane hit that air vent, it sucked gas and everything down to where he was at, and burning real bad. Oh. I don't know if he survived or not.
Well, and if that had been your gun turret it hit, you might have been burned.
Yeah.
But you were on the other end of the ship.
Right.
So the war ends, and you make all these trips back and forth across the Atlantic to bring American GIs home that have been fighting in Europe.
Right.
And then eventually you get out also.
Right. We went to Panama, and then from Panama we went all the way around to Everett, Washington. We left the ship there, and they begged us to stay in. They offered us a rate, money, vacation, everything, if we would re-sign. And as far as I know, 2 guys signed, but we had a small crew by then.
Because you needed all the space for those guys you're bringing home.
Right.
So then when you get home, was it easy to go back to being a civilian, or was that kind of a challenge for you to make that transition?
Well, to me it was easy because I was still a single man, and I went and stayed with my father and mother.
You worked on the farm.
I looked for a job. I kept looking for a job and looking for a job, and jobs were hard to find. So I just helped them on the ranch. And then eventually I started working in construction and farming, part-time farming and part-time construction.
And the construction work you did, a lot of it was at what was then Castle Air Force Base.
Right, mostly Castle, yeah.
So what you worked on there was helping to install the lights on the runways.
Right, right. And the approach lights and fuel tanks.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he had some big fuel tanks, and they were all underground.
Well, and the reason that strikes me is here you are in 1946, 47, whatever.
Yeah.
Working on this runway at what forever was Castle Air Force Base, a very important strategic base throughout the Cold War. It is decommissioned in the mid-1990s, and then 20 years later, you're back on that runway that you worked on once upon a time because that's where your Central Valley Honor Flight took off.
Yeah. Well, right now, Obama was there about a month ago.
He was, yeah, visiting Yosemite, yeah. So that runway's seen a lot of traffic over the years.
Imagine what it costs. Ooh, that's must be that thick.
So the honor flight, you go with 65 other World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. Your son goes with you as your guardian.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? What was that experience like?
It was a real good trip. And then I lucked out. My son went with me. We had real good weather. We went all over Washington. And then my brother helped us get to the museum. They wouldn't let us go in.
So there's a Navy Museum in Washington, D.C., but it's on the Navy Yard that's an active base. Yeah. So you need special clearance to get in and see this museum. It's not something the public has access to, but there was something there at that museum really wanted to see.
Yeah, we wanted to see that turret.
A turret, not just any 5-inch gun turret, but one from your ship, the Reno.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And it's got our name on there, our ship name on there.
What was that like to be with that here on a trip where you're already having all these memories come back and then you see guns from your ship?
Yeah, it was something, yeah.
What did you think about when you were standing there next to it?
It made me feel real proud of it. And it was highly damaged. All I heard was that it would shoot, a little crossways. That plane hit that turret, knocked one gun out of whack. Mm-hmm. But we kept using it.
Mm-hmm.
We still used it. You still shoot everything with it.
I want to ask you more about some of the things you did on that trip, but just in general, as you're doing all this with a son who wouldn't have been born if you didn't make it home from the war, you never would have met your wife. You'd go on to have 4 kids. Now you've got 10 grandkids. One of your grandsons is at the Naval Academy now. Does it hit you that... You told me when you saw those guys, when 48 guys were killed on your ship, one of the thoughts was it could have been me.
Oh, yeah. You have to be, we lucked out. The whole ship lucked out because the gun didn't blow up. And that was one dangerous thing about AA cruisers, when they were overloaded with guns. They're a brand new ship.
When you say AA cruiser, you mean anti-aircraft. The whole design of your ship was to take out the enemy planes. Yeah.
And so we were overgunned.
Right.
We had a lot of ammunition. We knew that because then they lost 3 of them right away.
So you guys knew that you were kind of a floating bomb. And then you get hit by torpedoes, but you don't blow up.
Right, didn't blow up. And it hit it right in the center of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
We got hit right in the middle of the ship. The ship was always, one-third was always on duty. That night I had to shift for 4 o'clock in the morning, the next morning, when it shook me out of bed. The guy said, that somebody hit us, that some other ship had rammed into us. But no, it shook like that. It went sideways, and it went round and round. We still had an engine going.
Yeah.
But we could control the ship. And
while that was all going on, were you scared?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. We were just dumb kids. I was only about 19 then or 20. We didn't think nothing of it. We just did whatever they told us to.
And on this honor flight, I mean, the whole idea is to get you guys there to see this World War II memorial that wasn't built until 60 years after the war. And most World War II veterans have never had a chance to see it.
Right.
When you got to that memorial with your son and you looked at everything, the fountain, the pillars for each state, and that wall of gold stars representing 406,000 Americans who didn't get to come home like you did.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think about while you were there at that memorial?
Yeah. No, it made me proud.
Did you have any strangers come up to you?
Oh, yeah. I still do. I still have people come and thank me. And then I was in a parade in by Morro Bay, Cayucas.
Cayucas, yeah.
Okay, you ever been there?
Oh yeah.
Okay, they have a big parade there. I was watching the parade, and here comes a pretty girl and grabbed me and kissed me. I mean, it made me think right away. Gee, you're real nice. I mean, first class. And she came over and thanked me and kissed me and surprised the hell out of me. Yeah.
That's a good day.
And then I had other people come in and thank me. Mm-hmm. I still do. I mean, even down here in town, sometimes I meet somebody and they'll come out and say they want to thank me for being there. You know, I'm glad I went. And I never was afraid.
On that honor flight, when you landed back at Castle, and you got off that plane, I mean, you're not going through a terminal or anything. Yeah. You walk off that plane right there on the tarmac. What did you see?
The people were real happy. They gave it a real good reception. And once in a while, I heard my name. Somebody called my name out. In fact, somebody called me and said that that I was on the Reno. They knew who I was and what ship I was on. It made me feel real good.
Here's a column of flags for about 50 yards.
Yeah.
And you've got cheerleaders in their uniforms and the bands playing.
Yeah, everything of that. Yeah, all that.
It's just basically sunset. Pretty striking scene.
Yeah.
Did it make you feel like you were important?
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, like I'd done the right thing. People hollered my name, and some people I didn't even see who they were. And I know some of my neighbors, they were there. Well, my daughter was there. Who else? There were about four or five of my family there. It made me feel good. No, I'm glad I went. I'm real glad that I went. I was always proud of it.
Well, I want to say something that I'm pretty sure you heard a lot on the honor flight, but I want to say it myself. I want to say thank you for serving our country and for telling us a little bit about it. Is there something that you think we need to know, those of us who didn't live through World War II? What did that tell you about America and what people here are made out of?
Well, everybody that I knew that was in the service, Army or Navy, whatever, everybody was real happy to go.
What would you say you're most proud of?
Well, the uniform and everything, as far as that goes. Yeah, no, I'm glad I went. I just don't want my grandkids to go fight a war right now that they have it over there in the Middle East. We don't know who's on our side or what.
Well, and you have a grandson at the Naval Academy now.
Yeah, right now. And he's the youngest of my grandsons. I'm real proud of him. And you know what? I got to tell my kids, they don't believe it. We used to get $2 a day. That was our pay. I went to Fresno, see if I can get some glasses that would be better than the ones I got.
At the VA?
At the VA.
Yeah.
So I went down there, and I got this little Japanese girl, real, real nice. And she kept working on my glasses, until she got one that perfect. And my daughter said, how do you feel getting that free? I said, well, I didn't get them free, mija. I told her, you know, I put in 3 years for $2 a day. That was my pay during the war.
And you almost lost your life, and you saw others lose their lives.
Yeah, we never thought about that as far as the fighting going on. We just did the best we could. I'd go again if it was up to me to go.
And I don't think there's anybody listening who doesn't believe those words. That's Al Peguero, 91 years old. Check out his photos at hometownheroesradio.com or pull us up on Facebook. Al explained why his glasses weren't free and the price of so much that we take for granted continues to be paid by our men and women in uniform today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.